Welcome to Girl Flower Podcast with Vic and Jess. We will be having conversations and inspirational chinwags with florists and growers to keep you company in your workspaces, in the car, over a cuppa, or wherever you like to listen. We hope to help you along on your own floral journey. Today we are in conversation with Victoria and Barney from Stokesay Flowers. Stokesay Flowers grow beautiful English garden flowers in a Victorian walled garden in Shropshire. And recently, Victoria has written and self-published a gorgeous book called Favourite Roses for Cutting. And it is full of the most beautiful garden roses. It's a definite must-have for any rose addict. It's available to purchase through their website, and you'll find all of the details on our show notes. We absolutely loved our chat with Victoria and Barney, finding out about their journey into flowers, their approach to growing, and delving into how their business works. Thank you so much, Victoria and Barney. You were wonderful, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
So before we talk about how things are now and what's going on in your wonderful garden, how did you two first meet?
We
worked together in London as translators, and
when we were 22 and 23, I think.
Yeah, we were put in the same office, a single room, just us two.
So it was bound to happen, and we made it like a little cozy room. Every time anyone came to talk to us, we made them a cup of tea and we gave them a biscuit.
Yes, it wasn't a very highly pressured job.
It wasn't very pressured. It was nice.
That's how we met, yeah.
Oh, and then from, so you were both working as translators, and how did you then go from working as translators in London to having this big garden? Were there jobs in between that kind of led you towards growing, or was it a sudden decision?
It wasn't obvious, was it? Neither of us really wanted to be in an office in the middle of a city. Barney retrained as a surveyor and got a job in Shanghai, which was still an office in the middle of a city, but it was an adventure. I retrained as a gardener with the Women's Farm and Garden Association, which I think is brilliant. You do two days a week in a garden for a year, and you just learn all about everything in that garden. And I did other things too. I did sort of internships and things. So I was trying to be a gardener. And then I went and joined Barney and did garden design. But we knew we wanted to live in England and be rural, and Barney thought maybe he'd be a land agent, which is like a rural version of a surveyor, isn't it? And I've kind of lost track of it now. So we came to Shropshire because you thought that you would work at, you did a course at Hobbs Adams, is that right?
Yeah, I did it. I needed to become a land agent. They told me you need to learn about farming so you can do that at Harper Adams in Shropshire. So that's why we came here. And then I did work experience with with the local land agent, and the partner was on the phone to a landowner saying, "We've got this walled garden. What are we going to do with it?" Because the tenants had just left. And I thought, Victoria would love that at that stage, because we weren't really we didn't have very permanent jobs or anything.
We were just bumbling around, weren't we? So yeah. No, it wasn't an obvious, there weren't obvious jobs leading from one to another. We just picked up sort of life stuff as we went along. It sort of wound its way towards this.
Yeah.
So when you found the garden and you thought Victoria will love it, and you spoke about it, was it a conscious decision that you would create this garden together, or was it always going to be flowers that you would grow there? How did that kind of progress?
It was just me to begin with, although you did all the mowing for me very kindly, and I was doing farmers markets with flowers, and there were some Michelin star restaurants in Ludlow at that time, which is our nearest sort of nice town, and we were supplying them with fruit and vegetables. But it was just not lucrative. Not that growing flowers is the most lucrative thing you can do, but at least there's a sort of, you put in the effort and you do make some money from it. Whereas if it takes an hour to pick a punnet of wild strawberries and you're charging £2 for the punnet, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? So we quickly stopped growing fruit and veg on our tiny scale and focused on the flowers. which is so beautiful. And how could you not just want as many as you can possibly cram in?
Yeah.
And gradually you realised that you needed to do it too, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I was doing little bits and bobs and, you know, the land agent work wasn't coming through.
Wasn't forthcoming.
And, yeah, I suppose it was when we had our son that...
I think there might have been a bit of an ultimatum, actually.
It may have. Yeah. But it's worked out great, isn't it? And it's, yes. it fits our different skills really well. I think there's something for everyone growing flowers.
That's lovely.
There are different aspects of it, yeah.
And when you say small scale, so I have looked on Google Earth at your old garden, and it looks huge, and it looks like there's quite a bit of it that still is grass and fruit trees. You know, it's not completely to flower bed, or is the Google Earth an old picture?
It could be an old one, couldn't it? It's 1 acre, the old garden, and it's divided roughly into sort of six bits, and one of the six bits probably looks as though it doesn't have anything growing on it, but it has lots of narcissi under the grass. But pretty much everywhere else now is sort of triple layer planted. We've got bulbs and perennials growing through all bulbs and biennials, and then late season annuals, and we just try and cram in as much as possible. We are pretty much at capacity now, except for the beds that are smothered in weeds and so don't get any, you know, flowers out of them. All along the north facing wall, we planted lots of Japanese anemones a year ago, and we've just, poor Viv weeded them about three times, and the buttercups have triumphed, haven't they? But most of the garden's in pretty good shape.
That is kind of a full-time job for two people. So, Victoria, since we last spoke, I am now growing flowers on half an acre. Yes. And so I have half of what you have, and I'm already finding that it is too much for one person.
Yes,
I have a list of things that need planting and pricking out and potting on, and there's always the weeding to go, and I'm trying to fill new beds. So I can completely understand why you told Barney he had to get involved, because I keep on telling my husband that he needs to get involved as well, even though he has a full-time job.
Isn't it? And you've got two children, haven't you? It's difficult to fit it all in. Are you still doing floristry work as well, or are you just focusing on growing that?
No, I'm doing a bit of floristry work for Vic as and when she needs me to freelance for weddings, but no, I am really happy in my wellies and, you know, my kneeling mat, digging around with the worms and the weeds.
Even for two of us it's too much work. Once you're selling flowers and delivering them and doing all the admin that goes with it and making sure everyone gets what they want and all of that sort of thing. So it's too much for just the two of us. So we do have helpers now as well. So
how many years now has it been since you took the garden on?
Well, we took it on you took it on in 2012, and then I became fully involved in 2015. So yeah, 9 years. This is 9 years now.
Wow. I was going to say, and how long did it take you to feel like you were fully productive, like you were producing? Because I think you'd come from doing some gardening and some garden design, but it's very different to farming it, isn't it?
Well, we did grow lots of flowers in the first year. We started with annuals, obviously, because you get so many for your pounds, don't you? You get millions of seed, and we did have lots. But I guess, I don't know, what fully productive. Like it's definitely fully productive. We didn't start to take a regular salary from it until we'd been going for about 5 years, I think.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, I'm sure other people do better than we do with that, but we weren't, you have to be pretty organised, I think.
And how did it look at the beginning when you decided to get rid of the fruit and vegetables and pull your energies into just flowers? It obviously started off with farmers markets and things like that for your flowers. So how did you develop kind of like a wholesale vibe? How did you find your clients?
In between, we did weddings, and, you know, we did wedding floristry and event floristry. And we also did a few courses. Just, I don't know, you feel that you ought to try different things, don't you, when you do a small business. But one other local business, the Great British Florist, who are in Hereford, got in touch after we'd been growing for a couple of years to say, if we have surplus flowers, could they buy them? And they've been buying them ever since. They have like half a van of flowers every week, and they're great, really great. Yeah. And they are the only sort of sizable business we know who send British flowers across the country. They're just great, so we like them. And then after we'd been supplying them for a year or two, somebody came on one of the courses, just was so lucky, this lovely lady called Lucy, whose husband has an enormous fancy members club in Mayfair. And she said, could you supply him? And we were just a bit overwhelmed at the prospect. We thought it was a bit of a joke. But we did, and we've been supplying them for 5 years now, I think. They have a van of flowers every week in the season when we have them. And it kind of grew from there, really.
Yeah, that gave us the confidence, I think.
But also having done lots of, not lots compared to Vic, for instance, but, you know, having done event floristry of our own gives us the ability to supply other event florists because we kind of know what they're looking for. We can imagine. So sometimes they say, like one of our favourite customers got in touch this week saying, I've got this budget and I want this number, I want to do this number of tables for an event. What do you think? What can you supply? So they just leave it to us. They're more confident. They just leave it to us and hopefully we get it right.
Well, I'm sure you absolutely do. Yeah, I mean, I think that is such an important thing. It's, I know, for instance, when I buy off of Jess, because she knows what I need, you know, because she's had that kind of experience. And I will say, oh, well, I need some stuff for bridal. I need, like, you know, lovely twiddly bits for bridal, or I need to do this. And Jess will know exactly what she needs to come.
And she's worked with you as well.
Yeah, it's so simple. And it's so nice to be able to have that connection with your grower, regardless of whether it's Jess or whoever, you know, if they understand what you need, you know, rather than you thinking, oh, what am I going to get? You know, like, I'm just a bit worried, you know, is this mixed buckets going to actually do what I need them to do? But yeah, so useful.
So do you still offer the floristry service?
No, I think we've got a few more weddings that we've taken deposits for, you know, a long time ago that we are going to do this year, and maybe just two actually, and then that's it.
And then you're just going to concentrate on growing completely.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. No, we did one the other day, and it just brought back this sort of excitement. There's so much it's a different kind of
activity.
Yeah, it's different to do it just growing and selling, but yeah, it's fun.
It is nice, isn't it? It's lovely
knowing that it's someone's special thing. Yeah.
And the last couple of years, we've only done really small weddings because we didn't want to do any more big installations. And that's nice because it's more personal somehow. You're making a thing that the bride's going to hold or someone's going to have on their head. It's nice. But I think we decided we need to focus and do a better job of our one thing.
Yeah.
So you started out growing and then felt like you needed to offer the wedding flowers as part of it because you had flowers that needed using.
Yeah, we needed to make money.
Yeah, but now you've kind of gone full circle back to that. Oh no, we just want to grow.
Yeah, I think so. That's why we got into it, because we like being in a garden.
Yeah. That's really interesting to know. I think there are so many people that try to do it all, you know, you have to work out what you've got time for, don't you?
Yes, and also have you know, have faith in who you are and what your skill, what your thing is that you're giving the world, and do that. You don't have to be like all the other. There are loads of brilliant people, aren't there? And they can be them, and you can be you and do your thing.
Yeah.
So, Barney, did you train on the floristry course as well?
No, my floristry is quite limited. No, I don't. I mean, in the when we were doing weddings, I might have been allowed to do a couple of milk churns.
You were great at milk churns. As long as they're bold, they look gorgeous, don't they? Filling in some big stuff. You did some lovely ones.
No, so not on the floristry side. And I've just learned as we've got, I mean, because I didn't have Victoria's got more of a horticultural background, and I've just learned as we've gone, really. Which is the best way, really. I guess I've
learned as we've gone along too. I didn't learn about growing cut flowers today. Just pick it up as we go along.
Yeah.
So how have you found it working together? I mean, it must be going well as it's been many, many years. How did you find that? How did you find it in the beginning? Did you know that you would be a great team?
I suppose we met when we worked together, didn't we? I guess Barney's just really easygoing. I think anyone could work with Barney.
No, I think we work quite well together. I don't know. It's you just know each other's strengths and weaknesses, don't you? And we also have a sort of vision of what we want to achieve in our worlds in terms of living off the land and that kind of thing. So as long as we are true to that all the time, then
it's more than a job, isn't it? I think when you're I found it with floristry as well, and it's probably anybody that's self-employed, it's more than a job. Your job is your life. You kind of you live to work and work to live at the same time. It's just all the same thing. And I think if you're outside all day, it must just be lovely to, you know, I'm finding it really fulfilling, and I'm not even a year old.
I can tell you're really fresh loving air. It.
Yeah, really loving it. Mm. Absolutely. Learning all the time, as you say. You know, you think you know one thing because you've done it before, but then rather than growing 10 plants, you know, you might be growing 200 and 100 of them haven't germinated and you have to try and find out why. You know, that's the learning curve, isn't it?
Mm. Yes, some things we still can't quite work out why. Say, for instance, 1 year, was it 2 years ago, we had the most enormous Sweet Williams and we can't work out what we did that year. It was so gorgeous. I didn't know Sweet Williams could be so gorgeous. And ever since then, they've been kind of ordinary again. I don't know if it was, I think we need to do better record keeping. I know some flower growers are really brilliant at keeping records. You try to keep records of when we sow things and what the weather was like, but it's difficult to catch everything.
There's so many variables, aren't there? Unless you keep really accurate details of, because I keep details of in our diary of whether it's rained or so we could probably you know, work out that 2-3 years ago there was a lot of rain in March and maybe that helps, but if there are so many different things that can change, and also how we plant them as well, because sometimes we probably put them in and think, oh, they'll be fine, and then it doesn't rain for a month and that slows them right down. So it's really
we're getting much better at being ruthless as well, and sort of editing. If we know that things are going to get pot bound or sort of checked before we can plant them out, then there's no point really. We might as well compost them or give them away. So we used to be a bit more frugal, but now, yeah, we're more ruthless now.
How have you found the weather this year? Because I know we spoke to many growers, and it's just been a bit of a crazy year for the weather.
It has. Seems like the shape of things to come, doesn't it? We had a really cold May, like everyone, and didn't have very many flowers, but the garden is looking much better. I'm not sure if that's because we had more time to garden it or if it was because everything had a chance to sort of grow on a bit more strongly before it started to flower. Yeah. So it hasn't been too bad.
Good. It hasn't. I feel like it's all been, it must have been like, although nothing was growing on the surface, everything was working away underneath the ground.
Yeah,
so definitely. Their roots were getting stronger, and they were, you know, all growing down for the water, weren't they, when it was dry. And then all of a sudden we had all that rain and they've just kind of gone poof, hello.
Yeah.
It's like they're breathing a sigh of relief. But the weeds have done the same thing. And for some reason, those grow twice as high as the plants you want to grow, don't they?
Oh, it's so discouraging, yes.
No, I think everything's more or less, do you feel as though it's more or less caught up now, or do you think we're still a little bit behind?
It's difficult to know, isn't it? Maybe a tiny bit behind, but not too much.
So.
And you grow everything uncovered?
Yes.
Greenhouse, yeah.
Because we're all about the romance, Vic, so it's all in the garden. Right. We don't want polytunnels. We've got one little polytunnel that was with the garden when we took on the lease that we use for our propagating.
Mm.
It's like a little tiny one, so all the seedlings are in there, and tomatoes. But everything that we grow as a crop is in the open. But it is very sheltered. We are lucky because we've got the big high walls around us.
Yeah. Well, Jess and I were speaking, and we think that everything about your business oozes romance.
Good.
The way your copy reads on your website, your blog posts, the way your way it all looks, all of your images look, it really does. Oh, it has that. It honestly, it's wonderful. You really create an atmosphere with every area, you know, that you're putting out there to people kind of online and through all your channels. Mm. So
nice to hear.
Yeah, that's really kind. Thank you.
You do make it feel like you must wear lovely big straw hats and floaty dresses and just waft around.
Not you, Barney, not you.
Well, maybe the big straw hat.
Yeah, big straw hat, yeah.
Yeah. But you don't show it that, you know, that when the ground's all flooded and you're knee deep in mud, you know, that's not your image. And it does just feel so romantic. And I want to just sit in a deck chair and drink tea surrounded by your roses.
We'd love it if you could come and visit.
We are coming. We are definitely.
Great.
Yeah, we'd love to. And then over lockdown, you have written your amazing rose book.
She's got it.
I love it. So I wanted to ask about your passion for roses. Is that like your main?
Pictures.
Oh my God! Don't even. Those are beautiful.
Isn't that amazing? You just love them. I mean, well, once you've got to see a few roses, I don't know how anyone could not be passionate about them. But I know some people just think they're like any other flower. They're just so beautiful, aren't they? And they smell amazing, and they're so romantic. And so many of them have amazing stories. That one, Charles de Mills, also is known as Bizarre Triomphant, which is crazy, isn't it? Funny names, and apparently no one quite knows the history of it. I love the story of the stories of the old roses, and
they're just amazing. But I was going to ask about growing them. So yes, you've got a lovely protected walled garden, but everything you grow is kind of out in the open. And so lots of people that grow roses kind of have, you know, a Spanish tunnel over the top of them to protect them from the elements. Do you find that yours are quite protected, or do you just sometimes have to go, oh, well, here comes the rain, bye-bye roses?
Yeah, sometimes we have to say, oh, well, it's really heavy, that's that. But I don't think, well, the last couple of summers have been so dry, haven't they? We haven't really had much rain in June. And also, you pick roses not when they're fully open, don't you? So if a fully open rose is going to be obliterated by rain, but if you pick them in bud and they're not, some of them the rain will make them ball or would damage the petals and stain them, but others you can just shake it off and they'll be fine. It doesn't matter. So I suppose it depends on the varieties. And then sometimes we'd have to just not pick the roses, but we don't really have any losses. I don't think we've had any big problems, have we, with rain?
No,
we've got a rainy day today.
Maybe there are a couple of things that make it easier. Having a lot of them helps.
That's true.
Because if you know, you've got one white rose bush and you need it for a wedding on Saturday and it rains on Thursday and Friday, you know, that's tough. But if you've got lots of bushes, then you're spreading your risk a bit. And also, I feel as though our customers are a bit more flexible now. So I think if we didn't have, you know, if someone really wanted white roses for Saturday, and I think we're just better at knowing when to pick them. So we'd plan ahead and we'd make sure, okay, we're going to pick them on Friday night because that's the only time to pick them, or even Saturday morning, you know. Do you know what I mean? That you get a bit more
So definitely it would be better to have a roof over them sometimes, but also I've known growers have a Spanish tunnel thing and they get really mildewy because there's no air circulating, and I think they want to be outside in a nice gardeny setting. They need fresh air circulating and to feel the nice rain. I don't know, I just think everything grows. It knows how to grow it. You give it its conditions that it wants, and it knows how to grow.
So would you say that roses are your passion and that's why you wrote the book about them? Or is it just that you thought, right, we've got a lot of roses, let's share some knowledge, but you love everything?
I think I love everything, but roses especially. I think they're my favourite. At home, mostly what we grow is roses. Yeah, and there's so many, there are thousands. There's so many more. I recently joined the Historic Rose Group and I'm very excited about learning from all the rose nuts there. I met someone with 350 varieties. I'm desperate to go to their garden.
My goodness. Well, I'm taking my mum tomorrow to the David Austin Rose Garden.
Ooh, that's so near to us.
Oh, I know. But I wish I had more time. I could pop over. But yeah, I just thought I'd take her over there. I need to buy some more roses. I have a list of ones I need to buy from I've looked at from your book as well. So I need to Google all of those. But yeah, I think I'm still not sure whether my plot's going to be perfect for roses.
Well, it better be, Jess.
It better be. Or my husband's going to be building a massive wall.
What are the varieties on your list?
So the varieties from your book are, I loved the Ethel, Buff Beauty, Shandos and Emily Bronte. And then on my list for David Austin is Queen of Sweden. I've got that one in the garden and she's so upright and tall. I want to stop cutting her from the garden and put her on the plot. And then Tranquility, and is that a David Austin one? I couldn't quite remember. There you go. So that's another load
that's
of roses.
That's the backbone of our garden, of our picking garden, really Tranquility. It's amazing. It's so generous and perfect. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That's what I'm going to be buying tomorrow. Queen of Sweden and Tranquility tomorrow.
Is it harder to grow roses? Is it quite a specialist thing to do? Or is it
I think as long as you look after them, if you plant them well, if you put them somewhere, if you basically put them in rich soil and keep them mulched for a couple of years, then they should be fine. Just do it, don't they? But you do need to prune them to sort of keep them rejuvenated. I think that picking roses is really good for them because you're always sort of making them do new growth. So ours are really healthy. I'll go back tomorrow and the garden will be covered in black spot or something. But they're really healthy. And I think part of it is the mulch. So they've always got this nice, moist, rich soil. But part of it is that we pick them quite hard. And so they're always rejuvenating.
So you're kind of pruning as you go, aren't you, by cutting them?
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you had to have in your garden, so a flower for each season, not including the roses that you grow, so one for each season, what would you choose? What do you find is either your favourite or like the most popular one with your customers?
In spring. What's your favourite in spring?
In spring, maybe hyacinth, I don't know.
Barney used to have pots of hyacinths in his flat in London because he likes the smell. So you were a flower grower in the making. And I like narcissi. I really love narcissi.
Yes.
All the different kinds. Well,
narcissi.
And so what would you go for summer?
Sweet pea.
Another good scent.
Has to be.
I don't know. I'm looking at a vase of snapdragons now on the windowsill. I love snapdragons. Can you see them?
Oh, they're beautiful.
The mottley ones are tetra ruffled giants. I just love those. Never get bored of snapdragons or roses or sweet peas or that little phlox, creme brulee and cherry caramel. Love those.
Yeah, beautiful.
Jessica's got some of those growing in.
I have. They've just started to come into flower, but they are teeny weeny. And I remember from growing them in past years, they come through tiny and you have to keep on deadheading and it takes a little while for them to kind of actually get some length.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? I feel really impatient waiting for them to get big.
Yeah, just keep chopping their heads off.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
And so what would you pick for autumn?
It would have to be... Oh, I don't know actually. Hydrangea or chrysanthemum. But then I might throw a dahlia in for the summer as well. But
they're so prolific, aren't they, dahlias? I'm really into chrysanthemums. Oh, if I write another book, I need to grow lots more different varieties first. But we have quite a lot of varieties of chrysanthemums now, the big fat florist ones, and all sorts of little hardy garden sprays. Mm. And they're so generous and they smell great and they're so interesting and so pretty, and they're sort of nice thing to look forward to at the end of the year, because it's one of the nice things about English garden flowers is that they're always changing, aren't they?
I think we all think of chrysanthemums like the Dutch ones or the very stiff ones that you get from the garage. When you grow chrysanthemums, I've only ever once grown, like one variety of the big bloom ones, which were lovely. Yes. But generally, do you find that when they're the English grown ones, British grown ones, that they have a different feel to them? Are they still stiff and rigid? Yeah. Like, are they still as stiff and rigid as the Dutch ones, or do they tend to be a little bit?
They are quite a stiff flower, but it depends on the variety you grow. So we really like the Aloise varieties. There's a salmon, a white, a pink. There are lots of different sort of soft, pretty shades. They're just voluptuous. They're all sort of got all these millions of little crisp petals, and they twiddle out and they're all fat and they're just amazing. And if you had a bucket full, you'd be enraptured about them. They're just gorgeous. They're
hearing so you speak about chrysanthemums make me almost love it, because I really don't like chrysanthemums, but I can just, do you know what? I'm going to have to look up Eloise. And yeah, I know Aloise, that I'm going to absolutely love them as well.
Aloise, right. Oh, Aloise. I'll bring them down.
Oh. Yeah, they're gorgeous. There's so many kinds. And you've seen pictures of chrysanthemums grown for shows, you know, old men growing them for shows. They do all sorts of clever pinching out and feeding and training. And they get something else again. There's colossal flowers as big as your head. That's like a, you know, a sphere. They're just mad. So there are all sorts of different chrysanthemum things. But the hardy garden ones are... They're just I don't know, more like a Michaelmas daisy, I suppose, and they're softer than they're not so rigid.
They're lovely, and they last well, don't they?
Perry's peach is a really nice one. Yeah, and no one can ever resist. Yeah, they last really well.
So, do you grow your chrysanthemums from cuttings that you take, or do you buy cuttings every year?
I'm quite a big shopper, getting a tip. So I always buy them from Halls of Hedden. I think
that's
in Northumberland.
Yes,
they're really good. There's this other, there are various places that have them, but we also do some cuttings. And this year, when we pinched out the tips of our fat Flora's chrysanthemums, we couldn't bear to throw them away because they were so fresh looking, so we stuffed them in pots of compost, and they're all gorgeous. They're all growing on, so they're ready to be planted out. So you get lots for your money.
Or maybe I'll have to give it a go, Vic. You'll look them up and fall in love.
I literally am excited about chrysanthemums now. I never thought I would say that. Yes.
We'll have to come down when you'll have chrysanthemums and dahlias, and then we can see them for ourselves. That'll be beautiful.
Yeah, please do.
And so, do you have a favourite for winter? Are you able to supply all year round, or do you find that in winter you have a bit of a break?
We love a break in the winter. We love it.
Yeah, definitely have a break. There are one or two things that carry on after the frost, but basically once the frosts come, that's it.
So November to March, we don't really sell any flowers. We just get the garden nice and have a rest. But at home, we have planted a couple of things so that we can have things to pick. So we've got soccer cocker and winter sweet, which was something that was growing near to where we lived in Shanghai. I think it's going to take about 10 years before it flowers for us, but every year we look at it and we're all excited. It's a bit like a witch hazel, but really richly fragrant. So there are some lovely, richly scented things you can have in the winter, aren't there? And it's always exciting when the snowdrops come. They're lovely.
Wow, I love the idea that I might get a winter off.
Yes, great.
Just to make Christmas wreaths for you, Vic. Oh, Vic's gone now. She'll be back in a minute. Yeah, just the thought of Christmas and Christmas wreaths. So what's it looking for you like at the moment in your garden? What is in flower? What's at its best? And what are you cutting for your customers?
What's at its best? Well, the roses are at their best.
Peak rose,
yeah. Everything really sweet. There's just too many to count, aren't there?
The sweet peas, yeah.
Some of the annuals are starting to come now. Ami, larkspur can't be too
looks pretty good.
Far off.
The snapdragons are great.
Snapdragons.
Bunny says, I say every year it's going to be a great year for snapdragons, but I think this year it really is.
Snapdragons are a new one on me. I have never grown them at home, and I do have a small-ish polytunnel because my site is very windy. I don't have any protection, so I had to put a polytunnel up for sowing seeds. And so I have a row of sweet peas in there, and I have a row of snapdragons in there. And I've got snapdragons outside because I thought they'd be much later. but actually the ones outside are much stronger and nicer than the ones that are inside.
They
just seem to be much straighter as well.
They put their roots down stronger, maybe,
but they're all planted at the same time. And I think also the colours of the ones outside, I must have planted the ones I prefer outside, because they're pleasing me much more.
Do you sometimes think, when I see flowers, whatever country they're grown in, that if they were grown undercover in a very controlled way, they don't seem to have as much life in them as actual garden flowers? That's why we talk about English garden flowers, because they're just a bit different, I think.
Yeah, you're right. They do kind of have a movement depending on what the weather's been like that week, don't they?
Well, it's not just about twiddlers. There's a sort of vibrancy.
Vigour.
Yeah, there's...
But that's bound to be the case, isn't it? If they've just been cut and they haven't been in a fridge.
But you know, they also haven't been controlled. Anyway, I don't really understand how mass production of flowers goes on, but they definitely seem to create a different product.
Yes.
Something like different. Well, Canterbury Bells at the moment. We're overrun with Canterbury Bells.
Yeah, we just this morning picked 7 buckets of them.
And we haven't touched it.
Wow.
Haven't scraped the surface.
Wow. Yeah. So you're producing like buckets and buckets of flowers every day from your acre plot.
Yeah, I think last week we picked more than 100 buckets of flowers.
It was
been pretty busy. Yeah, there's so much in the garden, so you can grow loads on a small acreage. You just have to do it intensively. You have to keep feeding the soil. Just keep replenishing the soil, because you're taking so much away.
And you talk about kind of triple planting things as well. How does that, you know, I know nothing about growing anything, but I'd love to hear how that kind of works.
So we planted, for instance, we've got some tulips in a flower bed that we don't pull the bulbs out when we harvest the tulips. We leave them in, hoping that we'll get another crop. And so over some sort of 2-year-old tulips, we have some biennials that we've just finished picking now, or over the hyacinths we had the sweet rocket. So we've just finished picking the sweet rocket, and they've cut it back and weeded it, and then we'll plant some rudbeckia and nicotiana in there. So we'll get 3 crops a year from that.
How long does it take for your tulips then to flower again? Do you find you get a crop the year after? Like if you're leaving the bulb in?
Just a smaller crop. They're not so strong. And the flowers are usually smaller too.
Okay. So you're buying new tulip bulbs every year for that year's tulip crop, but you're not pulling the old ones out. So you're kind of just letting them do their thing. Mm. And then one day they'll come back in full swing, or they'll just be smaller tulips.
They just fade eventually, don't they?
Yeah, they fade away. And also, we've realised that you can... We always used to cut the stems, and now we've realised that you can pull them
to get a longer stem.
And so that also depletes the vigour. So they're less likely to come back if you pull them.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I always thought about, dig them up. That's what
Yes.
Dig them up and then discard the bulbs. And I'm secretly hoping my compost bin will erupt into some joyous tulip mound come the spring. But that's interesting to just leave them in. That's a lot less work as well, isn't it? You're not digging the soil, which is good for it. So you're just pulling, planting something else, and then next year maybe getting a few smaller tulips.
Yes. I think people, when they say discard the tulips as well, they probably wouldn't put them on their compost heap because they don't want to spread virus, do they? That's one of the reasons to pull up the tulip bulbs. If you're a big commercial grower, then your horror is getting tulip fire. So that's why people pull them up.
Jess, you've got that in your compost bin.
But I'm not massive.
Well, you might not have
massive.
It.
Oh, God.
You might not have, you probably won't have the virus, will you? But it's just something to look out
for. Yeah, okay.
But we take the risk and...
Leave them in. Well, there you go. That saved me a mass. So that's a great tip. Saving me a massive digging job in the autumn. No, spring.
I'd love to talk about your rebrand that you had. Was that something you decided, you know, kind of locked down to have a refresh, or what kind of prompted you to go for a rebrand?
I think one of the main drivers was that everyone called us Stoke Sea Flowers anyway. because her previous name was a bit of a mouthful, Flower Garden at Stokesley Court, which just did what it says on the tin, you know, but it was just too long.
It was too long. Everybody called us either Stokesay or Stokesay Flowers or Stokesay Garden, or they just, so we thought we'd shorten it. That's the main reason.
That's the main reason, yeah.
There you go. I love the illustration and everything. I love the whole vibe of what you've got going on. It's gorgeous. It really reflects your brand beautifully.
The wall, the bricks, yes. And the door. Yeah.
That was done by the girl who was sort of, I don't know what you call it.
She's an illustrator.
Yeah, for the book. So all the pictures in our rose book are from our garden, but she found the nice illustrations that go on the cover. And
she did an amazing job.
Logo as well, Rosalie Herrera.
It is a beautiful book, absolutely beautiful. And there's something about a door, isn't there, in a wall, a garden door. It's very secret garden.
Enticing.
Yeah, just want to kind of go through it. I'm absolutely obsessed. Every time we're in like a new little village and you see a door in a wall, you're like, oh gosh, I bet there's a gorgeous garden behind that. So, the only place to get your book, am I right, is through your website. So you've completely like self-published this.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, I love it. So anybody wanting, and it's just all the roses that are grown in your garden. And I love that you've put like, you know, their habit and, you know, what to do with them and how tall they go and how they smell. It's just a really good information book, you know, if you're choosing roses for your garden. It's basically like you just want to buy one of everything.
Well, six of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Six of everything.
Thank you so much to Victoria and Barney for joining us this week. We really, really enjoyed our chat, and we hope that we can soon come down and see your absolutely beautiful garden. If you would like to go ahead and swoon over their beautiful Instagram page, then please feel free to do so at Stokesay Flowers. So that's it for another week. We hope that you're all faring well in the heat and during the season. We send lots of love, and we will see you again this time next week. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode of Girl Flower Podcast. Please subscribe, share and review on your podcast provider, and help us to reach out and connect with other florists, growers and enthusiasts.